The cool air chills and raises the hair on the back of your arm as you see red around you. You can feel the hands wrap around your neck and the icy cold fingers tighten around you. Lights shut off and on, and doors slam. You can feel you're not wanted. You can feel the presence of something, something which you can't put your finger on. It's not even Halloween, so why am I so scared, you say? Well, it's close enough, because you just passed down the road in a car, and behind you, a sign says, Fox Hollow Farm.
I didn't see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot.
Paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side.
Welcome to the Black Cat Report in episode 69. I'm Joey, your host, and with me today is the Ghoulish Gill.
Hello.
Now, last week, we got into Herb Baumeister and his murder spree spanning from 1980 all the way until his suicide in 1996. He left a profound mark on the Indiana scene, taking at least 20 people's lives, as well as ruining so many families and even his own family's lives, destroying his wife's life and his business. This was a defining point in his family's life when they purchased their first home, Fox Hollow Farm. At the price of almost $1 million, they moved into this residence and, well, Herbert literally littered the property with bones. He was just early on this Halloween trend of putting skeletons in your yard.
Nobody can afford the 15-foot tall skeleton from Home Depot this year. So, you know, Herb was just doing what he had to do.
Yeah, making it easy. Well, Herbert didn't just ruin the people's lives surrounding his victims. The house itself he inhabited helped mess up people's lives even after his death. This episode, we're going to delve into Herbert's house, Fox Hollow Farm. Like I mentioned on the last episode, Fox Hollow Farm was on a beautiful 18 acres with woods and nice flowing creek on the property. The house itself was amazing, with its white painted top half underneath the roof, brown wood beams, and, as they say later, amazing pool. To be fair, this place should be a heaven for its owners, as it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, so lots of crickets, lots of nice, you know, nice yard, nice places to go for kids to play. And you remember last episode when the kid found a nice little skull on the property.
I love that your idea of, like, this place is an absolute heaven. Lots of crickets.
Well, it's quiet, so you know?
Yeah. So many crickets.
It's so you can hear the crickets, you know? Well, that's what I think
just
of
the way
beautiful.
The bones rattle in the rib and the wind.
Yeah.
The crickets chirping.
Crickets and the bones. Bones.
Bones.
So it was beautifully quiet, obviously to say, and peaceful. So it was away from a lot of other houses. And for what it was not expensive. So the house was purchased from Juliana Baumeister by Vicky and Robert Graves in the early 2000s, as they were looking for a place that could give them the peace and quiet they wanted. So Vicky and Robert toured the house with the real estate agent and asked why the house was so cheap. Remember in the last episode when we talked about the house, you know, it was purchased for $979,000 by the Baumeisters. Uh-huh. And today's, you know, we said it was about $2 million,
yeah.
I think. Well, the house, you know, was still on sale for $989,000. So it didn't really increase in price, even with, you know, the value of the dollar going down. So the realtor responded that it was because it was literally the serial killer Herb Baumeister's house. There's just not, they weren't, you know, they weren't throwing shade at anything. They were just like, nope, it's their house. This is why it's so cheap.
At least they were honest about it.
It was true. You got to. So Vicky and Robert decided, well, what the hell? It should be fine. It's literally what we want, and it's cheap, so no big deal, right? We don't really care about that. Well, for a few months, it seemed like everything was going really, really well. Their kids were loving the house, running around the pool. There wasn't a bad thing to be heard or seen. Well, about a couple months in, it, for some reason, just stuff started happening to them. So one day, Vicky was vacuuming the house while the kids are running around the pool area, and the vacuum just shuts off, right? So just pop, stops. And she's like, oh, maybe I pulled the cord out of the socket. Okay. So she went to the outlet on the wall and she's like, oh, well, yeah, it's pulled out. So then she just plugs it back in. No biggie. Goes on vacuuming again. And again, it shuts off. She checks the socket, plugs it back in, then went back to vacuuming. Again, it got unplugged. So this time she's like, well, obviously I'm not doing this. She checks the slack on the cord to make sure, you know, like, okay, well, I honestly don't think I was far enough from the wall. So she's, you know, this isn't that bad, you know, kind of like, it's like, oh, this is a small thing's happening, right? Well, a few seconds later, she's like vacuuming again and she's literally looking at the outlet and it just, something just yanks the cord out of the wall and slams it across the room. And she's just like, whoa, what the hell is this? So she gets this really weird feeling that something does not want her to be there. And her hair stood up on the end of her arm and she stopped and just like walked out of the room.
That was actually like a very sensible response. I feel like most people would have been like, and then they got into their nightgown and decided to go down into the basement with a flashlight that doesn't work. Like, yeah. It's always a bad move after that. They were just like, you know what? Going outside. Bye. Just left.
Yeah. They just left. Yeah. She's like, I'm done. And she's like, just went to go hang out with the kids for a bit. She's like, eh, just tired. You know, maybe whatever. She, something didn't want her in their room. She got a weird feeling. I would do the same. To be fair.
Solid.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, this is just the beginning. And as I said earlier, it's not that bad, but that feeling of someone being in the room that you can just feel and they aren't actually physically there. And then you feel like they don't want you there.
Like Jesus.
Right. Yep. And to be fair, Vicky, she was a scientist. So she was like, she worked in lab. She really wasn't that much into ghosts, and I feel like this is kind of how it starts for a lot of those people.
Oh.
She really wasn't that much into ghosts, and she was like, ah, I don't believe in that hooey. I don't believe in that stuff. I do believe she probably said hooey as well. It's early 2000s. Could have been that. Well, as I said, this is just the beginning. So her husband was named Rob. He was a car salesman, and he had this friend who worked with him who was just consistently late to work, right? So, yeah. So
just hold on. Tell me he's a used car salesman. Whose literal first name is Rob.
Yeah.
Short for robbery.
Yeah. Oh. Just like my car right now, which
meant
we're honestly going through.
Yes. Damn, yeah. Rob.
Yeah.
Rips off wig. No. Sorry.
Herbert, Brian. Well. Now, honestly, it's not that kind of late that most of us were used to. He wasn't drinking or partying, like, you know, probably went straight to your head at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
He was just really late because of the traffic he had to deal with. But when I thought about it and I was like, why didn't he just leave a little earlier for work? I don't know. That's just the whole thing, you know. He could have just left a little earlier, but, you know, it didn't mention any of the other stuff.
It says that I should be to work at 8 o'clock, so I leave my house at 8 o'clock. But no matter what I do, I'm not here when you guys want me here. I don't care. I don't know.
I'm just saying,
if you wanted me to leave earlier, you should pay me to leave earlier. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah. I have no idea. Well, honestly, Rob, you know, said that to his friend Joe LeBlanc, who is the other guy who's habitually late to work, so could move in with him. Into the apartment above the 3-car garage on the property.
Perfect.
Really, literally the one Herbert moved into after him and Juliana separated. But they did actually gut the place, you know, didn't kind of resemble the same place that they had anymore. One of the things they talked to Joe about it and were like, hey, are you okay with this? And he's like, ah, it's fine. Like, the whole thing's gutted. You know, it's almost a
different children
place.
Wallpaper.
Yeah. There's no bones in the walls yet. Well, you know, he moved into the house with the help of Rob and Vicky. They helped him. They like unloaded his boxes, and it took him about a half day to move everything in. So, you know, he had the usual post-moving crash on the bed. You all know after you move, and there are just boxes lying about you, half unpacked. You just get all your stuff out so you can finish tomorrow, and you're just so tired, you sleep in the most awkward position possible. Well, Joe, this night, had horrible nightmare. that it was in, he was running desperately through the woods, running for his life. He could feel that he was running from something horribly dangerous. And he awoke sitting straight up in the bed and then bolted out of bed, still half asleep, and slammed into the doorframe. He lay there for a moment trying to catch his breath and still felt the urge to run away. You know the feeling when you just need to run because something's terrible? He was having that. He was just like, as soon as he woke up, he's like, I got to go. I got to get out of here. Something doesn't want me here. Just kind of like Vicky felt when she was vacuuming. It's had the same kind of feeling. And that ruins a day when you wake up and you're just like, ah, and you got to go. Like, you got to just get out of there. He also slammed his head against the doorframe. So that's a great way to wake up, you know? It was horrible.
Wait, how is he hitting his head against the doorframe?
Well, he just like ran straight first into the doorframe because he got up. He really wasn't awake, you know? He was just kind of half awake. And he just ran, slammed like right into the doorframe because his door was open.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. It's like his, not the doorframe to outside, but the doorframe to his bedroom.
I was going to say, I'm like, you left out the part where he was like 9.5 feet tall and hit his head on the top doorframe.
The sides.
Yeah.
You know, which I've honestly done before. I've done that, you know, not slam my head into it, but I've ran into a doorframe when I was getting up when I had COVID. I just basically, you know, I did pass out and I kept walking into the doorframe because I couldn't see anything.
Holy shit. I think worst I've done on that is I've turned around and definitely just walked straight into the side of a door. Like the actual like perfect side of a door, like boom, like square in my nose.
Good times with doors. Good times with doors indeed. Well, so this whole episode, I'm going to go into a lot of the stories that they were telling and what happened. And to be fair, a lot of these stories centered around Rob, or centered around Joe DeLuca, who was the guy who moved in. most of the time, he was the, because he was in the garage, he was kind of the victim of everything happening here. So the first story is Vicky. You know, there's one story of Rob, but he in the, when I was watching the documentary, also said that he didn't really have a lot of it. He was like, I don't really feel a lot of ghostly stuff. And he was like, but Joe and Vicky fell into a lot of it. And he was like, it was just whatever to me. So, hey, it's just whatever. So he's just a used car salesman, Rob.
Even ghosts avoid car salesmen.
Right? They're afraid he was going to sell him life insurance or something like that. Well, another story they would tell is Rob was painting the house and waiting for Vicky to get home. It was a nice day, not dark or rainy, but, you know, just nice.
Yeah.
So as Rob was talking to Vicky, describing the painting he had done today, so he was just like painting the house, you know, usual during the day, getting up on ladders, making it nice after basically it was left for a while after the original owners moved out. Vicky looked over his shoulder and saw a man in the woods. And she's just like, the hell is this? There's got to be a trespasser walking in our woods. But she kind of just kept watching. It was really weird. She didn't really say anything to Rob. She just kept watching. And she saw that it was like a male teenager wearing a bright red shirt and denim jeans. And, you know, kind of just taking a nice stroll in the woods. Well, it was only right before she was going to call out to the person and be like, hey, you need to get out of here. She noticed that most of the teenager's legs were missing and he was like floating. And then he just vanished into thin air.
The second you said, noticed a man in the woods, just in my peripheral vision at the top of the steps, Data goes like this. He's like, like popped his head and you're like, and then disappeared. And Dad was like, whoop. I was like, what the fuck? Okay, so there's decapitated bodies floating in the woods now. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, we're getting there. Yeah.
Okay. This is explaining the price a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if nobody had moved in, so I guess everybody, you know. Obviously, yeah. If you hear a serial killer's house, you're kind of just going to be like, I think I'll just avoid that. Well, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Joe, who was living in the three-car garage, had a dog named Fred, cute little dog that he liked. So he and Fred were just sitting in the apartment, you know, the den part of the apartment. So just where the TV was, it was nighttime and Joe was eating dinner when he heard a knocking at the door, right? So the knocking grew louder and louder as Joe was like trying to wash his hands quickly so he could go grab the door, thinking it could have been like Vicky or Rob just coming to like talk, hang out or something like that. Who knows, you know? Right then, as he was like finished washing his hands, Fred, his dog's ears perked up and sat up straight looking directly at the door, which is never a good sign if your dog just literally perks up, looks straight at the door quietly. So Joe opened the door and nobody was there. He's like, okay. So he's like, whatever. So he closes the door and then he said he started feeling something weird in his room, in the room, you know, that he was in. So he looked around the room and then said to himself, huh, that's weird. And then, you know, to be fair, I utter that every time I look out my window when the automatic motion sensor light goes off into my bedroom window. So I can understand that. That's weird.
Yeah.
You just see lights going off. So he then got the overwhelming feeling that something was in the room with him. And as he sat down in his chair to watch TV, he saw something kind of out of the peripheral of his vision move behind him and looked around. Nothing was there. And that feeling remained with him for the rest of that night. And he had so much trouble. I mean, obviously had so much trouble sleeping, so he couldn't get back to bed. And he was late the next day. To work. Yeah. Well, honestly, there are so many more sightings and feelings that Rob, Joe, and Vicky got while they were living there. The woods and even the house felt like it was being haunted, especially the pool area. So another instance of this happening, Joe and Fred, you know, they like to take walks. And even though he was getting some of these random ghost hauntings or feelings, he would take Fred out, you know, for fresh air at night because he just said he'd like to do that, especially in Indiana for some reason. Well, as they're walking through the woods, again, Fred, his dog, perked up and then just took off. So he didn't have a collar on because, you know, Joe knew the woods for the most part. And he's like, Fred won't go far. I'll just go find him. So Joe went out into the woods to find Fred. And as he was looking around, he just turns to the left and came face to face with the teenager wearing the red shirt and denim jeans. Yeah, like literally right in his face. So it seems like this was one of Herbert Baumeister's victims. Because after a few more walks, he saw the teenager wearing a red shirt again. And then for some reason looked down and saw a human femur bone. Yeah, so finding more bones. And this is in the 2000s, so remember last episode I said they, to this day, they're still finding more bones and IDing victims. Yeah. So Joe, like a good normal person, called the original detective on the case.
Oh no.
Yeah. Well,
oh, no.
They went and grabbed the bone and then said it was most likely a bone from one of the victims. And so I don't think they ID'd that particular bone or who it was from, but again, they took it. And continuously they were doing this and just taking him and sending him off to labs and then putting them together with other bones they said came from the area. So that was another set of bones they were starting to find. So there wasn't any mention about if they messed up or they came and asked the owners if they could search the farm again.
Do you remember like how many acres was this property?
18.
Okay, 18's a lot. But it's not that much for the amount of like bodies that were discovered there. I feel like, and the fact that he like really wasn't like burying them, he was just like leaving them out on the ground.
Yeah.
Like I feel like they could have had a forensics team spend, I don't know, like 2-3 days just kind of literally combing through the grass to look for bones.
Yeah. I imagine, you know, probably what? So I'd say, so he started in 1980. They didn't buy the property until 1991.
Yeah.
It was only about 5 years, I think, that he really had of murder on Fox Hollow Farm.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know, maybe some of it could have just gone under the ground after a while. It's just, you know, it is a lot of area, but I guess if you knew the sense they're looking for, like if you knew how many people were there, it might be easier. But if you were just consistently finding bones, I think a lot of times they probably just stop searching.
Jesus.
Even if they just didn't find them. To be fair, you know, they're just like, we should stop because we've already found like 11 people. We've already found 9 people on this farm.
And this is like about 6 times more than I can count. All right?
Yeah,
I can't even count this high.
I remember they found 5,500 bones.
That's what I'm saying, though. I just feel like, I don't know, isn't it? Wouldn't it be like their job to get some kind of sense of like closure for all these like missing persons, like for their families maybe, or like, I don't know. I just feel like it's their job.
I don't know.
But that's just me. I just feel like they should have like cleaned the bones out of the area, not just been like, you know, there's more out there, right? I can't do anything about it. Like, what the hell, dude?
We searched enough.
Yeah. We can't even bring out a cadaver dog out here because it just everything smells like flesh. Everything.
Yeah.
Like,
to be fair, that's probably true. Well, again,
plus
a few
the
weeks
later,
is
haunted. Sorry.
Yeah, this forest is super haunted. I don't think
super
we can go
haunted,
in there,
bro.
And they probably were scared to go in there. Some of them,
true.
Especially if they were going in at night. But
this reminds me of the ditch.
Are we in that new movie, The Blair Witch Project?
Oh, God. The Blair Ditch Project. It's
happening. The Blair Ditch Project. Yeah, oh, God. Well, a few weeks later, again, poor Joe was sleeping in his apartment and heard knocking. So this time he's like, look. He starts yelling at the person at the door, kind of like challenging whomever it was, knowing this time, he knew this time that it wasn't Vicky or Rob because they weren't, I think, they were already asleep or something like that. So he was like, I know it's not them. It's like, it's got to be this ghost that keeps doing this. Well, as he got closer to the door, it got louder. Not obviously because he was getting closer to the door. It actually got louder. Like the slamming got louder on the door. So
it was like taunting him.
It was taunting him. So he opened the door, right? And it stopped. But it looked like the, you know, the knocker on the door, so like one of those things on the front, it was put at a 90-degree angle.
Oh, hell no.
And it was still there when he opened the door.
Hell
and
no.
So,
he ripped
the
ghost's arm off.
Yeah, like it was held up by an invisible hand.
My God.
And then one last time, boom,
no.
Slammed against the door and then stopped while he was watching it.
That's fucking
This guy, like, to be fair, I would be so mad. It's like, can you not just let me sleep? You know, this guy who didn't even own the house, but he was just staying there so he could get to work on time.
He's still coming in late.
Yeah, he's still coming in late. Well, Joe, again, was like, okay, I'm just going to try to go back to bed. So, but he's like, okay, I need to find Fred first just to make sure Fred's okay. So he's like found Fred, and Fred was hiding under the bed, thus like growling. Fred was like, I'm not coming out. I don't want to deal with this. So poor Fred was there. And as he was trying to coax Fred out of from under the bed, he heard the doorknob being turned slowly squeaking and then stop.
Like being lifted up slowly?
No, like the doorknob just turning.
The doorknob.
Yeah, the doorknob just turning slowly. It didn't open, just turned and then stopped.
Hell
and
no.
Then would be turned and then stopped. And then, right as if a gust of wind came through, the door blasted open and swung into the wall right behind it. And right at that moment, as Joe was looking at the door, looking out, a young man and ghostly appeared right behind him as if he was running for his life. The young man was in the doorway, turned around, and had an extreme look of terror, Joe would say.
Holy shit.
And after 2 steps, that young ghostly man just disappeared. So Joe stood there terrified and was left there with honestly so many questions. And poor Fred, you know, the poor little dog, he just wanted to sleep and relax.
Yeah.
But then Joe just didn't go to bed that night and again was late to work. So he just can't win. So it's pretty bad. And Joe described like he continuously had all these problems, you know, and he was the one that was just so weirded out because I guess that's we'll talk about it a little later too, is like in the documentary they talked about that if you went to the apartment above the garage when they were talking about Herb's victims, you might still survive. But if you went to the pool, you weren't going to survive.
Okay.
And they talked about that as like a lot of people, the people trying to run out maybe saw something and got tipped off and were trying to escape or something like that. And they think that was a lot of the reasons why some of these ghosts were haunting the garage so much. So maybe there were some bones underneath that they never found or in the walls, but who knows? Ooh. So for sure, these things were scary. But nobody had been, you know, physically attacked yet or, you know, super traumatized. Obviously, they're still weirded out by all this stuff happening, but not, you know, physically traumatized yet. Well, we know that Herbert Baumeister murders his victims by choking them to death. And as I said earlier, mostly did it at the pool. Well, one day, Joe and Rob and Vicky were at the pool relaxing and swimming. So the kids were at the pool as well. They were just running around the pool on the other side. Joe went under the water, you know, he's swimming and skimming the bottom of the pool. As Joe popped up out of the water, he was just resting on the side of the pool. So, you know, had his arms up, just kind of chilling, nice pool day, whatever. Joe started feeling these icy hands wrap around his neck. And not like I'm going to choke you, but like almost a sensual way, you know, just slowly reaching around his neck and then started to choke him. Joe turned around and like as he's choking, he's like, he's looking at sees the kids on the other side of him,
yeah,
on the other side of the pool. And he had a friend there who was also on the other side of the pool. He thought it was his friend trying to choke him, but then it lets go. And he's like, what the hell was that? So then he's like, okay, so he starts swimming to the middle of the pool to go towards his friend. And again, while he was swimming, he felt two hands on his throat, but this time it started choking him hard and he was pulled under the water and struggling.
What the fuck?
As soon as it started though, it just went away and Joe surfaced and caught his breath. He would never go swimming in that pool again.
Good call.
And I want to be deadly serious here, pardon the pun. If I were Joe, and I am among the Joes in the world, I would say it's time to leave. All these things were happening to Joe. This also would not be the last thing to happen to Joe because, well, he just wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
But that's his thing. He's kind of like, I got to go to work. So whatever, right? That's what happens.
Just leave earlier, Joe. It's okay.
Yeah. He's just not. Well, one of the things, you know, Joe got into ghost hunter stuff. So he's watching the TV shows. He was like, naturally, obviously.
Literally writing down notes as he's watching these shows.
He's like, what do I do? And he is, because he was trying to figure out what was happening.
Damn it, that's what I should get.
Yeah. He was trying to figure out what was happening because he didn't understand.
Yeah.
So he wanted to see if there's anything he could do to maybe, you know, get rid of the ghost, help out. You know, whatever. Well, one night while he was working on his computer, he heard scraping and footsteps coming from the kitchen. So a weird noise. Obviously, once you start hear scraping, it's never a good thing. So he walks into the kitchen and started noticing like scratches and gashes in the wall. And the knives that he had left in the knife block were laying in the kitchen sink. So as he saw in his favorite shows, he's like, well, I'm going to take out my phone and try to record this stuff. So it was go time for Joe. He pulled out his phone, just like he had seen on Ghost Adventures, and started asking questions. One question that was answered was, who are you? And the answer was said,
the married one.
Literally, yeah. It said, the married one. Which, you know, in watching the, you know, documentaries, I'm always kind of like looking at them, just seeing like, when they do the, you know, ghost adventure stuff and they kind of dramatize it. But when I heard it, you know, and I'll send a link to the documentary too, that actually shows some of the ghost hunters and they're doing it and him doing it, of like, it does kind of sound like the ghostly voice says the married one, which if we take that into what it's supposed to be and supposed to mean, it's Herbert Baumeister, and the only person that was in that house that was married was Herbert Baumeister. So it was kind of, because they did a bunch of research on all the victims.
Yeah.
And from all the victims that they had ID'd, none of them were married.
Ooh.
So that's how they kind of, you know, extrapolated that it was, they think it was Herbert's voice saying this. And it sounded pretty creepy when I heard the, you know, later on they did an episode and kind of asked similar questions. So, like I said earlier, they contacted Ghost Adventures to do an episode on Fox Hollow Farm. And it's online if you want to watch it. I actually gathered a good amount of stuff if you want to check out the episode. It's season 9, episode 9, so very easy. And, you know, you get what Ghost Adventures gives you, a dramatized version of the house. You know, it's like literally, what was that? Da-doom. Did you hear that? I heard it. Hello?
Hello, hello.
I was just opening a bag of chips. That didn't sound like chips.
It didn't sound like chips. I heard definitely kill chips. You out. What? And, you know, they play back all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, it's that, you know, if you've seen Ghost Adventures, you know what it's like. But if you want to see kind of like how the house looks, if you want to see the areas in it. And actually, I found out something crazy. Before I watched the documentary, I thought that the pool was an outdoor pool.
Oh, shit.
It is an indoor pool. It's literally their basement. And it's a pool in the basement. It's so weird looking.
Okay, that adds a whole nother level of like creepiness to it for like the whole serial killer vibe. Because there's like, I don't know, this might sound weird, but like the serial killer who's like murdering somebody like outside at the pool, right? Yeah. There's like that vibe. It's like a sunny day. It's yada, yada, yada. Like, but then there's like the entrapment that would come with like a serial killer who's the house owner trying to kill you while you're like in the pool in their basement.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's like a whole nother level of like you're confined, you're trapped, you know, like, ugh.
And we'll go into a little bit more in a minute of like his, of what he had around the pool, because it's crazy. Because in the documentary too, and in some of the Ghost Adventure stuff and like the book I was listening to and reading, there's just all these weird little intricacies that come out later that you're just like, what the hell, that kind of paint why this place also became a little bit more haunted or more stories, you know? So, well, I want to give a few more insights into the house, you know, that came up in research that I was just talking about. So during the time that Herb owned it and lived there at the pool, he put up a bunch of mannequins on the deck so it'd feel like a party.
What?
Yeah. So.
What? Hold on, what?
So he had a bunch of, like, just surrounding the pool, and it's in the documentary too. You can see it's creepy. There's just a bunch of mannequins sitting in the basement, right?
They're on the deck.
Like, sitting in random places. Like, one's, like, sitting up on the bar. One's, like, sitting up on the, in a chair. They're all dressed in a specific style of clothes that had its own backstory that he would tell the people visiting.
Dude. I'm just, could you imagine walking down into somebody's basement to go to their pool and it's just like all dimly lit and shit, and then it's just mannequins dressed all
there. Yeah. So the backstory and clothing coalesced. So
all have necklaces made of hoses? Don't worry about that.
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry about it. And there was a hose that was sitting on the side. That was one of his favorite. That was his favorite weapon to kill. So say if one was wearing like a Hawaiian shirt, that mannequin had like a backstory of coming from Hawaii on their vacation to visit. So they were like, these were his friends, you know, or maybe one of them was wearing a red shirt and denim jeans. Well, now to be fair, I can't tell you if this theory that I'm about to put forth is correct, but from what I'm gathering is that he wanted to keep his murders close to him. Well, I mean, look at all the bones just scattered on the property. So I think, and from seeing pictures of the mannequins and seeing this clothing style, I think he dressed the mannequins in the style of clothes and maybe the clothes that his victims had on so he could keep them closer to him. He was also schizophrenic, so maybe some of his victims attached themselves to him after each of his murders. I think, like, if you want to go into, like, because it's haunted and spirit, that after he murdered them, like, their spirit attached to this house, attached to him, and so he would still be able to talk to them through the mannequins. If you're going in that way, which the theory I was going is that I think that he felt that they were still with him. And so he created these physical entities to go along with his, like, mental, and in his case, I think, spiritual entity of looking at it. So I think that he really got this weirdness going on. And, you know, the people that came, you know, that were also murdered next most likely wouldn't know these people. So he probably wouldn't use the same name either, but they wouldn't know these people necessarily. So he could just get away with it. Be like, oh, these are just my friends. It makes it seem like it's a bigger party, right? Well, there was another theory put forth by the informant originally in the last episode, was the one that helped catch him, gave him the license plate earlier, Tony, which also found out that is not his real name. So we're not using his real name. So I feel better about this. But he thought that Herb had an accomplice that lived in the garage. So on the night that he and Herb pulled into the driveway, you know, this is the Tony we talked about in the first episode, the one that escaped. Tony recalled that Herb pulled the car on the driveway at a weird slant. You know, he didn't like pull in like you normally would, just like straight in, easy, you know, and you're pull up straight. He pulled at a weird slant and at a weird angle so that his high beams shone into the window of the garage apartment. And he said at this time he flicked it. He like flicked the high beams when he got there.
Oh, okay.
So as this happened and like nothing happened on the other end, so like they sat in the car for a little bit, Tony saw Herb get really, really out of character. And he just randomly started, you know, Tony thought it was Brian Smart at this time, right? So he didn't know he was Herb. So he like slammed his hands on the wheel and just like started yelling, "You can't depend on anyone anymore."
I really hope he was talking about Don Carlo, who was running the tiki bar down in the basement, who was actually a mannequin.
Yes. He was just hoping that he would have brought drinks up to them before they got, you know, they got there, just like the normal, brought them Lays.
I said to launch the balloons when we pulled in the driveway. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Just Don Carlo for shit. Oh, shit. No, this week it's Don Farlo, I mean.
Yeah. Well, I do think that this might like had a hint of truth. It could have been. And also he was schizophrenic though, in a lot of ways from what, you know, we've learned in that all that, especially with all the mannequins, he was creating these, you know, crazy things for him, probably talking to them. So he could have just been thinking that he had somebody else there, or maybe his second person hadn't come out yet, you know? So he was just kind of thinking about it. So theory of Tony's could be true, could not be. He's technically one of the only ones that survives, so he's kind of one of the only narrators of a story that not anybody else lived through. So
yeah.
Well, Tony also in the documentary told a story about his experience to one of the researchers that was coming to visit him, and this one was creepy. Well, while he was at Herb's house, or Brian Smart as he knew him, on the fateful night that we talked about in episode 1, Herb kept trying to get him to go into the darker parts of the house. So like parts where the changing rooms were, the parts where like the showers were, like a little farther into the house than the pool, which they're already in the pool. Tony said that Herb was talking to him. He motioned that they go into the dark shower room past the changing rooms near the pool. Tony said that at this time, you know, Brian kept telling him to go in, he kept feeling these weird things, like almost physically pulling him back and stopping him from going into this room. And he said that in his view, he called them shadow people is what he said. So he couldn't really tell in his feelings if they were like good or bad, but he felt at that time that they were trying to save him from being killed. And obviously he's the only one that survived. So these shadow people seemed to stop him from going past into the shower room. And at every turn that Herb motioned they go through and to go deeper into the house, he kept being pulled back and stopping him from going any further. He said, in an interview, he said that he thought they were protecting him.
Yeah.
And that they might have been victims of Herb's previous murders. It's, you know, obviously a lot of this is conjecture. A lot of this is, you know, a story from the informant, Tony. But in his view, he also was talking about that he was like he was very sensitive to paranormal things, you know, and we all know here that there's like some people are sensitive, some people are not sensitive to this kind of stuff. And he said that he was very sensitive to it. So he could gauge how he felt through these things and that he felt that they were trying to help him.
Damn.
Yeah. Well, Tony, as he was on the property with so Tony came back to the property, right? So after years of not being there, I think almost a decade, he came with the researchers because they asked him like, hey, is it okay? Would you mind coming, giving us some stories? You know, we'll sit in rooms and just see how you feel. We'll do EMPs just like a, you know, paranormal researcher.
Well, yeah.
He gave a few different stories as he visited Fox Hollow Farm after, you know, Herb had committed suicide, and that he saw many different spirits in the place. And as Tony mentioned, you know, as I said earlier, he was sensitive to ghosts. And he also said there was a mixture of different sides of emotions and energies at Fox Hollow Farm. And this, like, obviously I'm bringing this into it because this is how people feel like this place is haunted. And he said that you could choose to be lighthearted and draw out the good energies there, right? And vice versa, you could choose to be negative and draw out the bad energies. And this is what he said when they would go into these places, they would just have these really weird feelings. They feel like they say, they don't want to be there. They don't feel like they should be there, kind of that stuff. And then, you know, like, Rob really didn't have any problems, right? He he saw one thing and it didn't bother him, and everything else never bothered him. And the kids, you know, they never said that they saw anything. So again, I don't know if this is necessarily true because it seemed like Joe DeLuca was a nice and good-hearted person living with his dog. So I don't know why he was the one that was most attacked by the spirits. I mean, he was just habitually late, I guess, and they didn't like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just Vicky and Rob, you know, they kept finding bones on the property there throughout years of living there. So they just kept finding this, and it was really bad because, you know, they didn't want to find bones and their kids were out there. So they kept like, okay, don't go play in the woods. Don't go do this. And, you know, that's why they bought the house, because they wanted their kids to be able to go out there. They wanted friends to come over. And after a while, people stopped visiting. And, you know, after Ghost Adventures, they were just like, I don't think I want anyone to come over because all this stuff in the house. So they kind of eventually were just like, okay, well, we kind of hate this. So let's, you know, I think they still own the house.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, it is up for sale again. So,
oh, shit. How
yeah,
much?
I didn't check the price.
What?
I will one day. So
bet you it's an Airbnb.
It's a haunted Airbnb. That would be such an interesting, terrible... You stay in the garage.
I want to go, especially now that I found out that Damien from RKB Paranormal is, like, literally my cousin. Like, we're literally cousins. Like, we need a family reunion ghost hunting trip.
Yeah, you guys should go there. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
I can't stay in paranormal stuff. It's not me.
We got this.
Yeah, you guys got it. You record yourselves for a whole night.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, please record.
Bodysuit full of GoPros. I've been telling everybody, I've been looking at wholesale prices. I will get a bodysuit of GoPros.
Yeah.
360 view of everything that happens. 360 view of me screaming as high pitch as you can possibly imagine and peeing myself as I just fall downstairs.
That's what you do at home, though.
Yeah. Well, I got to test it first.
Well, true, yeah, except for the GoPros. Though I don't know what you do at your house with GoPros, so I don't think you have GoPros yet, so again, contact at blackcat.report, or you could also support us on Spotify if you'd like. For I think $4.99 a month, you can help us, you know, pay for mics. A little as a dollar a week. You know, a little as a dollar at all, actually. So
sure.
You can help us out, you know, get us through our research. So we'd appreciate it. If not, you know, keep enjoying listening, rate and review us. Well, I do want to add one thing that Tony also added kind of near the end of the documentary. There was another, he said that he thought that there was another murderer at Fox Hollow Farm before Herb, and that he believed that Fox Hollow Farm was more of an open point for spirits, and that most people who lived there would be visited by either the evil spirit, which he called
the married one. Oh,
Brian.
Oh,
and the good spirit, which he called Herb. Very weird.
What the?
Yeah,
this house has a lot going on.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, again, I don't know if I really believe this part of it. I think this is kind of like a little thing, a little thing with him just kind of leaning. And I can see that he was trying to give meaning to what happened. I feel like this for Tony, he was trying to give meaning to what happened. And for him, as like some spiritual leaning and understanding of why Herb Baumeister would do what he did, you know, but that's just my take on why he's adding things afterwards, you know. And it's like, this is him revisiting the place. So I think he's just kind of trying to deal with what happened to him, you know, his trauma at the house. You know, as I said earlier, in the 2000s, they brought ghost hunters. Well, they also brought demonologists into it. They brought, okay, so this is, they just like paraded everything they could into this house. They brought demonologists, paranormal investigators, just regular crime investigators. They
also brought
shamans. They brought Native American like healers. It's crazy, the list of stuff. And again, watch the documentary if you want to see everything. And there's just like, these people are just talking about everything going on in this house. And they're all just like, this house, bad. Pool area, bad.
They're just like, home inspector comes in. That crack in the ceiling, bad.
Yeah, bad. Yeah. Oh, dang, everything about this head
is a fucking
bad.
Lemon.
Yep. And, you know, just again, to be fair, I want to reiterate, you know, all this stuff is, you know, not in my realm of purview. But Gilbert's cousin obviously will want to research into this. So I hope he probably already knows about it. So Damien, you got this. But
hit you up, Damien.
Yeah. So as they went into the house asking questions, they got responses on their EVP. Most of the questions, you know, in this for the paranormal investigators, demonologists, shamans, and Native American healers who went into this house, they said, "Who are you?" And one of the questions were, "Where are the skulls?" Well, the first response they got to "Who are you?" was,
"Where are you?" Oh, I'm sorry.
You know who I am. You know why I'm here.
And the second question they asked was, "Where are the skulls?" And they received the answer,
"Pretty much everywhere you look. They're just around the corner, honestly. You can find them in the walls. Find them under there. We really didn't try to hide them. I don't know why the police are having such difficulty."
That's one version. The other version was,
"Herb lead pipe the skulls."
Yeah, like, and again, version. Yeah. Your version's a little better. But to be fair, there was skulls everywhere. And Herb's own son showed that while grabbing one with a stick, being like, "Hey, look at my skull!" And
I'm one of Daddy's friends. I'm one of Daddy's friends.
Just running around the house.
I think I know him. Well, in my opinion, the house is haunted in some way or another, and what Joe saw most likely was something of substance. It seemed to center around Joe while he was at the house the whole time, because, well, he was the only single person. And I think that most of the victims in life or death, you know, were all single. Yeah. You know, obviously in death were single. But as I said earlier, I think we talked about it, is that they talk about that he used the pool area to kill them. But most of the victims before the pool went to the apartment above the garage, where he lived after Julianne and Herb separated. So he kind of would go there first, and I guess they would talk, hang out, have drinks, and, you know, and if I guess he felt a weird thing, he'd go be like, okay, let's go to the pool. And, you know, he'd get them down to the pool, and then that's where he'd use the hose that was on the pool very easily to choke them, kill them. So I do not want to go to this place. It's terrible. And I just said earlier, because, like, I'm scared of these things, and I do not want that stuff in my life. But in the to end it all, the victims of Herb, I wish they had gotten the justice they deserved and that Herb had been caught and punished for the crimes because he was like a shitty asshole. And, well, happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween!
Well, next week we'll have a special Halloween episode coming out with listener ghost stories. So please send them to us via our email or our Instagram. So we can't wait to see and read them. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Black Cat Report in part 2 of Fox Hollow Farm and Herbert Baumeister. Please send us in your ghost stories or haunted stories to our email contact@blackcat.report or via our Instagram or TikTok. We'll have a special Halloween share for this. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you on the other side.